Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Charlie Rosen, the founder of the 8-Bit Big Band and saxophonist extraordinaire Grace Kelly, who guest stars at the concerts on Sunday, March 1st in Boston at the Berklee Performance Center. And it's just such a thrill to be able to talk with both of you.
Yeah, of course. My pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
You know, really, you guys have such stellar resumes, and I know you just never stop moving. So how was it possible to even get these concerts organized?
Well, you know, I do a lot of, like, orchestral and large ensemble conducting, arranging, music directing, all sorts of things in my life. You know, working in theater, there's a lot of orchestras, and I also have a number of other ensembles and as music directors to various singers and stuff. So, you know, when I started doing this a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, coordinating the amount of musicians and the necessary supplies, sheet music, you know, rehearsals and all the things, that's something that, like, that was the easy part for me because I've basically been doing that for the last 10 years since I moved to New York to work in theater. So that part I had under my belt.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, Grace, how did you get looped into these concerts?
Well, Charlie and I, our history goes back to Berklee College of Music, but I think we barely met there because, you know, he was bouncing all over the place and in New York doing Broadway and shows. But we reconnected when I was playing in the house band for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and Charlie was there doing one of the musical guest spots. And we worked on a bunch of different projects together, and super delighted that Charlie's brought me in to be a guest for the 8-Bit Big Band, which I'm such a big fan of. And we've done videos and recordings and shows, and are also friends. And there's nothing like making music with friends and amazing musicians.
Yeah, for sure. And Grace, I love the energy that you bring to your performances. And so it seems like that's going to be such a great fit with the energy of the concerts, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, we always have a real good time.
It's and great.
It's a super dynamic show, and the ones that I have hopped in with Charlie last year in Boston and then in New York, the crowds have just been on fire, and the music's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, you just finished up a sold-out show in New York, and I know everybody's looking forward to the Boston show. And Charlie, I really love your arrangements, and I love how you think about these iconic themes from Mario and Zelda and Final Fantasy as like the game songbook, the great game songbook. And so what is it about these themes that give them so much staying power, do you think?
Okay, yeah, that's a great question. And it's something that's a pattern in music that we see sort of over and over generationally. Music that has staying power in people's lives, I think has to do with the emotional experiences connected to when they first were exposed to the themes and the music. And so in the same way that, you know, the great American songbook and largely popular music at the time in the early 20th century was related to the experience of seeing Broadway musicals and the soundtracks therein, it was an emotional connection, that music based on an experience they had. The same can be said of film soundtracks and major movie themes that people love. They have an experience with this music, an emotional experience connecting to this music with media, then they love the music. The same thing can be said about video game music, in which they have an emotional and a nostalgic experience at a young age or otherwise connecting with this music through experience. And as such, these themes are related to a powerful emotional connection of that part of their life. And so the great news about that and the American Songbook and jazz standards, the thing that's great about that is if you have a body of work that everybody knows and has an emotional connection to already, then you can take that music and interpret it and do things with it, and people will understand what's new about it, what's exciting about it, and what's different about it, while being able to relate it to their own experience. And, you know, it's a, sort of a new journey that you can take the audiences on together through the shared body of work.
One of my favorite tracks on your second album is your sort of Frank Sinatra-inspired take on Still Alive from Portal. And in a million years, I never would have come up with the idea of singing it like that, but it totally works. And so what gave you the idea to do it like that and think that that was going to work?
A couple things. You know, it's kind of the perfect storm of a situation. First of all, we were making album two, and I had been arranging all this music, and the 8-bit big band goes so far all over the place genre-wise that people think of big band, they think of swing. But in reality, this big band doesn't play a ton of just straight-ahead swing and that an actual quote-unquote big band style. But so I was like, I want to make sure to do more like big bandy sounding swing thing. So I had that on my mind. Secondly, I was working on the music for The Marvelous Miss Maisel at the time, and I was doing some demo production stuff and some mock-up production. And there's a scene where they wanted What a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong, but in the style of Nelson Riddle's Frank Sinatra. And the arranger did the fantastic job of sort of making it sound a little bit like I've Got the World on a String, the Frank Sinatra version, but it was Louis Armstrong. And I had spent the last 4 or 5 days over and over sequencing all these versions of that as a demo. And so I had that Frank Sinatra Got the World on a String arrangement in my head. And I was taking a break from that. And I think I was just like taking a shower. And I was sort of playing around with like, and at the same time, I was looking for more video game songs to cover. And I had listened to Still Alive a lot, and I knew I wanted to do Still Alive, but I didn't want to do it as is. And so it just kind of like struck while I was taking a shower. I started singing the lyrics, you know, like Frank Sinatra, since I had just been working on I've Got the World on a String and Louis Armstrong, you know, so it all sort of like just blended together. And eventually it in the crock pot that is my brain, a dish was created that was this, you know, style arrangement of this tune.
We'll be right back.
this was a triumph. I'm making a note here, huge success. It's hard to overstate my satisfaction. Aperture science. We do what we must because we can. For the good of all of us, except the ones who are dead. But there's no sense crying over every mistake. You just keep on trying till you run out of cake. And the science gets done and you make a neat gun for the people who are still alive. I'm not even angry. I'm being so sincere right now. Even though you broke my heart and killed me, tore me to pieces, and threw every piece into a fire. As they burned, it hurt because I was so happy for you. Now these points of data make a beautiful line. We're out of beta, we're releasing on time. So I'm glad I got burned. Think of all the things we've learned for the people who are still alive. I've experiments to run, there's research to be done on the people who are still alive. And believe me, I am still alive. And while you're dying, I'll be still alive. I feel fantastic and I'm still alive. And when you're dead, I will be still alive. Still alive.
It's just great. Have you played it for Jonathan Coulton, the composer?
I have not personally yet, but he's tweeted that he listened to it and he really liked it. And a lot of people who I know have shown it to him because he's also somewhat theater adjacent. He does some theater stuff. And, you know, up until a few days ago, I was about to go on the Joko cruise because I know the people that are producing it. But I now I'm unable to. I was hoping to talk to him. At some point, I really want to talk to him. And also on album 3, we can expect a lot of people request the follow-up song, which is the end of Portal 2, which is called Want You Gone. So I'm doing another sort of Frank Sinatra tribute arrangement as that, as a follow-up. So that's coming in, like, you know, probably the next couple months.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, Grace, what is your history with game music?
Well, you know, I was never a gamer growing up. Well, I had my purple Game Boy and loved Pokemon. So oh, yeah. That was definitely, like, my jam. Also woke up at, like, 6 a.m. every day to watch the newest episode. But I definitely am a big fan of video game music, especially the songs that the 8-Bit Big Band has covered and then the brilliant arrangements that Charlie has done. So I feel like I'm kind of discovering a whole new world. And I'm really connected to the music part of it. Since my sister's been in the gaming world and the esports world, it's been a big part of our relationship and going to events with her. And this is also a very cool way to continue to grow that and learn more about the gaming community.
Yeah, for sure. Do you know yet which songs you're going to be playing on the concerts?
I think so. Do we know, Charlie?
I have yet to. I can't believe it's coming up. I really got to sit down and figure out this set list soon.
I feel you. All good.
So fast. There's going to be some new ones though. I don't want to totally give them away yet, but you know, I'm arranging some new stuff for sure.
Yeah, there's one that's going to feature me and Leo P. We have a little collab going on called We Are Too Sexy. So I think there's going to be a special debut arrangement that we're both going to perform on.
That'll be so much fun. You know, I love how, Grace, you're just, out in the world playing. I loved your video of you just kind of dancing and skipping up Lombard Street in San Francisco.
Oh, thank you. That was a one take thing. And my cameraman was walking backwards and we made it up. We made it up the hill.
it's just amazing. Was sax the instrument that hooked you like right off the bat, or did you kind of work your way up to it through flute or clarinet or some other instrument?
I've always loved the saxophone, and you know, hearing the recordings of Stan Getz and Joe Beam's music, which was often playing at home, with, you know, I made a mental note of like, I'm going to play the saxophone one day. Now, I had to start with clarinet in private school in fourth grade. And then they said a year later, if you're doing well on clarinet, you can go to saxophone. But I couldn't, I don't know, I didn't really have a connection with clarinet. So my parents rented me a sax, and then I got to just dive in right away. And I knew from the first time that I played, I was like, this is what feels right. Yeah, this is it.
It's so cool. Well, Charlie, I know you play like a million instruments. And so does that make it easier when you're thinking about the arrangements and how to get the different colors from the band? And what's neat about the arrangements is there's almost like a set of variations on these really simple themes.
Right, totally. Well, there's two answers to that. So the second thing you said about there being variations is that's the kind of the cool thing about arranging older video game music, is because none of these themes could really be longer than like 30 to 45 seconds, you know, and so they have an A theme and a B theme, and that's kind of it. If they're composed really well, you know, they have a great A melody and a great B melody. And so then it sort of leaves it up to me as an arranger to decide what journey I want to take now that I'm like not limited, you know, by that. And the cool thing about this kind of segues into your next point. The cool thing about being an arranger or a producer, kind of there's an overlap there, an orchestrator, all sorts of Venn diagrams there, is basically what that job is hearing the unrealized potential in a melody and a set of chord changes, and you're getting to drive the boat about what direction and what feeling and what genre you want to use to represent that. And what's really cool about that is you sort of have to have this vocabulary of instruments in your head and what kinds of sounds, textures, and emotions they can make, what contexts they go together to spark, what kind of genres and what those sound like articulating. And so I think that the more playing experience you can have on those instruments, the more that vocabulary is going to be in your head about what is right for that instrument, what feels good to play, what sounds the best, what notes will give what feeling and what part of the instrument and why, what you can and can't do. That being said, it's very helpful, but it's not necessary to be a great arranger. But I find that it's very helpful to know that so that I can really effectively communicate what I want from the players of those instruments who are much better than me, you know? Because if I can do it, they can certainly do it and better.
Thank you. arrangement of Delfino Plaza from Super Mario Sunshine is amazing, because that violinist just starts off with this incredible cadenza, and then it sounds like a jazz band that Stefan Grappelli would totally fit with. And so how much of the writing is driven by the people in the band, because you know that they can do this stuff?
It's sort of half and half. You know, I that cadenza at the beginning of that arrangement, I wrote. It's totally written out. And I actually wrote that cadenza as for viola and a guitar as a duet for fun a long time ago. And I sort of, when I was thinking about doing Delfino Plaza, I knew I wanted to be like Stefan Grappelli Gypsy Jazz, which the original already kind of is, but I wanted to take it farther into the trad 30s thing. And I knew I wanted to feature Todd, the violin player. And I knew that he was a really incredible, legit violin player and jazz player. So I sort of dug out that cadenza, it used to be in a minor key, made it work for this arrangement, stuck at the beginning, you know, and but then all the solo in the middle of the tune, obviously, I didn't write any of that out. That's all him improvising. So there's a lot of give and take, because I know that I hire instrumentalists that are going to have a lot of their own opinions that I would not have had. And so I think part of the excitement of it is the collaboration between where my work stops and their work starts.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And so, Grace, as you're up there performing, how much do you plan ahead of time? And then how much do you just leave to the spirit of the moment?
Being trained in improvisation and jazz, there is always a big space for spontaneous bringing in the moment with the crowd and the energy. It's like something that will always kind of bring a performance to the next level. So, you know, there's certain things within the music that are set, whether melodies or, you know, song structure, but then I leave a lot of it to improv, and especially feeling out a crowd and kind of bringing the stage performance aspect to it. A lot of that's like in the moment.
You know, I feel like a lot of musicians all sort of like have different approaches to that question, especially in like in a big band setting where there is a really set amount of time that you're soloing. It's some musicians are like, they come in with a general idea of like, oh, I definitely want to play this lick, and maybe the connective tissue around them will change each show. And then some people are like, no, this is the solo for this song. I've really thought it out, and like, this is what it's going to be. You know, and it's basically the same every time with only minor variations. It's funny how, based on their personality, you can kind of tell who's going to be what type of soloer.
Well, how do you recruit people for the band? Because this music is really, really tough, but it must be just a blast to play.
Yeah, it's definitely, they're challenging charts. I've been told by, you know, the brass players, it's a very long endurance race for them. There's a lot of hard blowing. The soloists are, there's tough stuff in there, cadenzas. Luckily, we live in a city, you know, where those type of musicians are abundant. And I've met so many great musicians along the way, working in theater and jazz and doing TV recording sessions and film stuff and really otherwise. It's just, you know, I feel like it's sort of like an abundance of riches as far as incredibly talented musicians go. Lucky for me.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you're bringing a slightly smaller band, like a 35-piece band, for the concerts in Boston. So is that going to affect the set list at all, or how you plan the concert?
I don't think so. And the good news about that is I think any major city that we go to that has a music scene in it, we're pretty safe. I mean, you know, I'm going to bring the people from New York that are the key soloists that really will like provide the sound from the top down. But luckily, when we go to Berkeley, I mean, there's an incredible wealth of badass students to draw from and local professionals, you know, so we're pretty much covered. And it's kind of a critical mass thing. If you have like six key people that know the music really well in key positions like lead trumpet, drums, lead alto, you know, lead saxophone, concertmaster, piano, and our pianist, you know, they can really, that's the framework with which everybody else can sort of like fit in well. And, you know, so we're pretty safe with, as long as it's a city with a music scene in it, we're pretty good.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. That's a great way to tour, because then you're really having people invested in making it a great show too. So, yeah, and what an opportunity for them. That's so cool.
It is very cool.
So what are some of the things that you both are looking forward to for these two concerts?
The concert itself. I mean, there's looking forward to debuting this new song and arrangement, and then hopping in on my guest songs and having a great show in Boston.
Totally. Also, an exciting thing for both big band arranging and video game music. It's awesome that in 2020 we can have a big band double bill. So I'm actually, It's kind of amazing
to
have Carlos Insane in the Rain also has a smaller big band opening for our 35-piece big band. He's got a 16-piece big band. But the fact that it's the year 2020 and we're doing a big band double bill, like it's the you know, 1942, it's like...
It's so cool.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome.
No, it is incredible. And I you can kind of see it coming because Chris Madigan's music for Cuphead was just like this runaway success.
And it just goes to show you that like it's really just about how the music connects with the experience of that media. You know, it can be music from whenever, and as long as it has an impact and is well composed, the thing I keep saying is that the best thing about video game music is because it's connected to video games, it's like the best delivery vehicle with which younger people are getting back into these styles of arranging.
Yeah, definitely. Chris told me he had to write a barbershop quartet, which he had never done before.
Sounds great. I know exactly what you're talking about. And I was like, oh, this game starts with a barbershop quartet. Damn. Okay.
So another one to put on your list for, you know, how to arrange it.
I get a lot of requests to do Cuphead, probably like once every other day. Someone's like, please do something from Cuphead. The thing is that stuff is like already big band, you know? And so like, I would love to feature him and do some of his charts and expand them. But it feels sort of like I don't want to reinvent the wheel. You know, this guy's already done such a great job, you know, so... I'm still figuring it out. There's a world for that stuff. I'm just figuring out what to do with it, you know?
Yeah, well, I love all your subtle references to like these classic big band sounds like Sing, Sing, Sing and Luigi's Mansion. And it's just, you must spend so much time just kind of reverse engineering what makes them sound like that.
Yeah, yeah. And those kind of things always sort of come in a flash where I'm like, I know I really want to do this melody, but I don't want to start it until I think of a fun new, you know, angle for it. And yeah, there's always, sometimes it's just like, oh, I got it, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's so cool. Well, so how can people get tickets?
I think the 8bitbigband.com/tickets is the way to do it.
That'd be the easiest thing. So, all right. Well, I know you guys are super busy, and I really, really appreciate you taking the time to talk about these concerts. And it's been really fun. So thank you so much.
Of course.
Likewise. Thanks so much.